Welcome, everybody. My name is John Roach. I teach here at Parsons, which is part of the new school. And that's important because the exhibition out in the lobby called Earlids was really an attempt for us to look at how sound cuts across this institution of the new school in different ways. And oftentimes we think about sound as relegated to specific kinds of disciplines like music or the jazz program or maybe sound art and fine arts. But ultimately there's a lot of different kinds of practices that are happening just within this institution, and they mirror in many ways the kinds of practice that's out in the world. So we wanted to really think about the things that are going on here to bring some awareness of different modes of thinking about and working with sound. So what came to mind for me immediately was the idea of inviting Wavefarm to come and be part of this, because they really, their history is such that they have been thinking about the complexity of sound and sound as it cuts through different kinds of practice for many years, and they really perfectly exemplify that. So I'm very pleased to have them come and join us. We also have a performance and a sort of listening of the work of Melissa Gray, who is an instructor here at the new school. She teaches in the media studies program. Do you teach elsewhere too? Just in
No, I no longer teach here, but that's
well, she used to, so she still represents this place as far as I'm concerned. So I hope you all stick around and enjoy the event. At the end, for those of you diehards, I'm hoping that we will have a special throat singing space activation performance by Robert Kirkbride, who is an instructor here at Parsons as well. So in thinking about the embodiment of sound, which some of this program has been about, he's going to make it sort of flesh and blood for us tonight. Mm-hmm. So thank you very much, and I wanted to introduce Sam, Sam Sebring and Tom Rowe from Wavefarm. And Galen Joseph Hunter is here as well, also representing Wavefarm. So thank you. Thank you for coming.
Tom, and this is Sam, and we're kind of both from Wavefarm. Sam was a resident at Wavefarm this year, September, was it?
September.
And Wavefarm is a place in upstate New York about exactly 3 hours drive. If you left right here and got in your car outside, you get there in almost exactly 3 hours upstate. Let's see. The Wavefarm started as a group called Free 103.9, an artist collective, in 1997 in Williamsburg in Brooklyn. The goal of the organization at that time, it was a collective of artists, and it was part of a movement that was going on all across the country to of civil disobedience on the airwaves, on the FM airwaves. Because at that time, the United States Federal Communications Commission had a catch-22 in its regulatory scheme, in that you could apply for a big giant license, but you couldn't apply for a little tiny license. They said the little tiny license was going to interfere with the big giant license, which is crazy talk, obviously. Two, 3,000 micro radio stations went on across the country in defiance of the lack of a regulatory scheme, and eventually got the law changed, basically, by doing things like setting up a radio station in a city in Texas, San Marcos, Texas, which is halfway between Austin and San Antonio. And the commercial stations licensed to San Marcos doesn't spend a word ever talking about anything going on in San Marcos, because there are advertising dollars in San Antonio and there are advertising dollars in Austin. And so when there's a flood and the whole town is underwater and the mayor needs to tell the community what to do in the time of crisis, he had to go on the pirate radio station because there was no communication system. So this, I can tell you 40, 50, 60, 70 other stories where the legal station in the town used to broadcast the community town meetings, and then they stopped and the pirate station would start. So basically, there was obviously a need for actual humans to participate in their media systems instead of computers in Los Angeles and all kinds of other things. So all these people went on the air and changed the law. And at the time, our group was interested in changing the law. But we also said, there's not much to listen to on the airwaves. It's pretty much all a lot of commercial garbage, mostly. There's a few things that are interesting to listen to. But so we were a group concerned with seeing if there was we could push the culture into creating more adventurous means of making radio. So so we started, Free 103.9 was just a normal pirate radio station, except it would turn over its transmitter to different folks in Williamsburg at different times, and people would borrow it for the weekend, set it up on their antenna up on their roof, and we'd let them go, and they'd do what they want, and the next weekend it would move to somewhere else. We'd also have all kinds of artists bring in and do performances in the transmitter instead of performing for people. And then we started branching out with some other ideas about how we could use the transmitters in different ways. And we did a show at the Kitchen in 2004 where we set up six transmitters and had about 60 artists performing into transmitters rather than into amplifiers and PA systems. So there was no sound in the room when you walked into the Kitchen. You got handed a card that told you that Thurston Moore was on at 90.7 at 9:30, and that Scanner was on 88.6 at 7:45, and so basically, and you got also handed a radio with headphones, and to use that information. And so, basically, the show was a unique show. Whereas when you go to a concert, you all have basically the same experience. You know, you might have seen the cellist from this angle, and you might have seen the cellist from this angle, but you all have basically the same experience. This concert experience was, everyone had their own unique experience. I can't tell you what stations any person attending the show might have listened to, whether they were the stations that we were putting on in the room, or they were commercial stations that were broadcasting, or they were pirate radio stations, or people, some people were listening to the static in between stations. So it was, the event was really meant to show people what is on the radio and what could be on the radio. And that is basically what our organization has been about the whole time. And that goes not just from saying like doing different radio theater than Rush Limbaugh does. It sometimes it means like using the actual frequencies and waves themselves. So we do all kinds of different experiments with all different parts of the frequency, not just FM. We talk about light waves and AM and short wave and long wave and all sorts of things. So I'll give you one quick little short example of the sort of simplest transmission, and then I'll turn it over to Sam to talk for a little while, and we'll start making some noises behind Sam. But this is the easiest transmitter that you can have. Is you get a power source, right? It makes electricity or power, and we're going to make a wave with this penny by making the connection here. And I'm going to turn on this radio. So that's the simplest transmitter you can make. You hear I'm making those click-clack noises. And you'll hear when we start making our sounds here that these kind of the sounds in between the stations, and the sounds of static are the stuff of for artists to work on in our world. I guess that leads to you, Sam, and your residency this past year.
Okay, well, I thought before I talked about the residency, I would just give some background on sort of who I am and what my work is about, because I didn't start out just working in radio, although sound has been really important my whole life, but I guess my whole life I've attempted to connect visual and sound mediums. And before I go on, I should let you know that this is the first radio that I got when I was a little kid. I think I was 7. That's a Crystal kit, and I still have it, and it still works. So that was kind of a magical moment for me, the first big radio moment in my life, even though I went on to do other things, and now I've come in this big full circle back to being completely fascinated and entranced with radio. But in the 80s and 90s, I was mostly painting and doing visual art. Even though I was mostly listening to the radio and to music while I was painting, because I really deeply believed that all those sounds were going into the paintings. And that goes back to another really early childhood epiphany that I had when I was taking piano lessons, and I was being taught to play classical music and Bach or Mozart or whatever. And I was really never being told that I could, how to write my own music. You know, it was just always about interpreting other compositions. And that was really frustrating to me even as a little kid. No one was saying like, oh, do you have any sounds in your head that you'd like to learn how to get out? And, you know, that would have been nice. And, but one day in my music theory class, I came in and the teacher had us sitting around a table, and she had a bunch of crayons and paper, and she put on Ravel's Bolero, and she said, I was like 11, and she said, okay, now I want y'all to draw what you're hearing. That was like the hugest moment for me, because then I understood like the colors of music, I understood getting the sounds out of my head, but it was like in a visual way, not in a musical, oral way. I guess what happened then is, you know, to my parents' dismay, I pretty much ditched piano lessons at that point and just went full steam ahead into painting. Also skateboarding, that's a whole other story, but for the next 25 years of my life, but also always like being around musicians and musical thinkers, and in the 80s, my paintings started becoming these sort of complex personal socio-political narratives about the human condition. I was living in the Lower East Side and getting deeply politicized. This painting's called Paradise If You Can Earn It. So you can see this one's called The Art Opening. I was really early on getting really critical of the art world. This one's called Stuart with Pigeons. So you can see that, you know, even in painting, I was doing these really dense compositions, and that are almost really noisy. And my musician friends would always tell me that they could hear my painting. This was the time of AIDS and Ronald Reagan. I was listening to a lot to industrial squatter band Missing Foundation, who ended up playing up at a show that I had at Fashion Moda in the South Bronx, and the cops came to the opening, which was, pretty huge achievement in 1986 to have cops come to the South Bronx for anything, much less to an art opening. So this is the only surviving picture I have. So those are my paintings on the wall behind them. This is after the band stopped and we made friends with the cops and doing devil horns over the cop's head. That's me. I had like this sort of Afro thing with a Hitler mustache. I don't know what I mean. But also to continue the connection with music, this fellow here is Juma Santos, who is the incredible drummer and Malcolm X's nephew. And he was a really good friend of mine at that time. So it was another way of like musicians and artists always connecting. So I guess, let's see, where am I? I really just began to understand more and more the need for art and music to get out of the galleries. And I was getting more and more involved in street art and public intervention work. Which I still do a lot of, including wheat pasting. This is on an ad on somewhere on Broadway or something. So that's obviously Varda doesn't use flies for their logo. So these are ad alterations. This is a sticker. And up to now, where I'm now taking my street thinking and public intervention thinking out to sound in public. So I've just started doing this new project called Black Maggot, where we're performing in and around my car with amplifiers in the back, all set up with a generator. So that's inside. But that car, so that sat there all day with just that sign there until at a certain point in the evening we convened on the car, opened it up and started doing this really loud, easy performance. Questioning the ownership of public sound space, which is kind of what Tom was just talking about who owns the airwaves and who owns the public space. Try to move along here. And in the 90s, I lived with jazz composer Karen Mantler in a loft that once housed the New Music Distribution Service in Soho. And I actually lived in a corner of the office while it was still operating. And this is a mural that I did on the roof there about sound. I was just always around musicians, but I was still really locked into painting and thinking things in terms of visual. But then finally Karen and I and a couple of other friends decided to form a noise band called Splotch. We started playing, we made a couple of records. So that was really fun. That's somewhere in Williamsburg. That's on the roof. And so that was just like this messy, idiotic kind of thing. It was really cathartic for us. I don't know if anybody enjoyed it, but we did. At a certain point, ironically, right around the time that Free 103 was coming into Brooklyn, I was kind of phasing out, and I decided to move upstate to this little village called Athens that doesn't even have a stoplight. I was just kind of done with the city, and I wanted something different. And so, little did I know, this was like 2000, that in a few years, Free 103 Wave Farm would be right up there in my territory. So, just wanted to let you know, like, sort of how sound, and art have always gone hand in hand for me. And I just think they're both so integral to every single second of our daily life. But it's really up to artists to help keep that integration going And I think to keep de-commodifying art and music and keep opening it up. And I think that radio is one of the last frontiers. And it's also a really great metaphor for life itself with all of the non-linear imperfections. So I don't know, I just feel like right now for me, I just feel so lucky to be working with Waveform and working in radio. I think it's one of the best ways to cut through the noise of the art world right now, for one thing, and reach out to a really broader audience. You know, because like artists are really driven to communicate, and so why not just go right to a communications medium? So, Tom.
Yes, and so Sam and I are making sounds behind while we're talking because we're radio artists, and we don't believe in the fake silence that radio stations have playing behind when people talk. There's not a silence. Silence doesn't exist. John Cage proved that. Others have proved that. What you're hearing is a 60 kilohertz hum when you hear radio. You hear the 60 kilohertz hum of the electronics and the light bulbs and stuff in the background. Instead, we think there should be interesting sounds. Because radio should be interesting. So that's the goal of Waveform, is to find artists that are interesting, that want to engage with the airwaves. And so we set up a residency program. We have a FM radio station, a 3,300 watt full power FM radio station in Greene and Columbia County, just south of Albany. We're installing an AM radio station on the property in the spring for artists to use. We have all kinds of scanners and shortwave. We're going to have some longwave receivers and such eventually. But basically, we're trying to set up a artist retreat where all of the frequencies can be interacted with somehow and pulled in for their work. There's also a library that has transmission art books from around the world. Transmission art is the phrase we use rather than radio art. Radio art kind of only implies that it's going out through an FM or an AM. Transmission art to us implies that we're using the full radio spectrum. Our artists are using the full radio spectrum in works that we participate in, including everything from light, the light part of the spectrum to the audible and inaudible parts of the spectrum. So we engage artists in the residency program that's about a 10-day program now, and artists get a chance to focus on a specific radio project where they either use the library or the equipment or the frequencies available there, or they often use the FM frequencies and put on special shows and other projects that no other station in the country would put on. We put on durational works. Our studio is actually right next to the Marina Abramowitz Institute, the proposed institute upstate, and we talked to her about durational works. We've already done all kinds of durational works, and we're basically, WFMU, I guess, here in the city is the only other station in the country that you can even compare what our FM station is upstate in that there are weird sounds and weird projects going on WFMU as well, but there aren't any other stations in the country that Canada has a pretty good reputation, and there are a bunch of European stations that we partner with. We're part of a radio network of stations around the world, about 21, that focus on international radio art and new and forgotten ways of making radio. So so that's what the Waveform residency program is. We're setting up some more environmental things too. There's one artist that has, there's a couple ponds on the property, and one artist has set up a contact mic under the water to pick up the underwater sounds. We've got other microphones in trees and throughout the property bring in the sounds of the animals and the wind and such. So that's what we're for. There's a place to artists to interact with all sorts of waves, mostly radio, but some white waves too. I think Sam is going to talk to
it. Okay. So, let's see. When I heard that Free 103 was in my area and trying to start up a new community radio station, I immediately jumped in head first because I'd been living upstate at that point for about 8 years. It was kind of like a hermit. There wasn't a lot of connection between people. People are really spread out. And it's hard to find other like-minded thinkers. And so I knew the potential for community radio in that area to connect people and inform people. And I couldn't wait. Plus, you know, it's not like just any station. Like, you're telling me a bunch of micro station pirate freaks and sound artists are starting this. Like, sign me up immediately. And then we live in an area where a lot of people never even heard of community radio. So this alone was like jumping off of a cliff. And I love jumping off cliffs. Let's see. Though I live locally, it's difficult for me to get time, like a really block of time, to go to the waveform, which is about 20 minutes away from me, and utilize the library, really great library there, so that I can delve in and learn more about this medium that I'm enjoying so much. So I created this project research for a residency that would let me investigate the library and educate myself while also sharing that knowledge in the process. So I guess I'm thinking more now about radio as a medium that really reaches a broad audience, and so the trick up there is sort of how to make something that's both uncompromising to my own aesthetic, but also listenable for uneducated listeners up there who, like, have never heard of John Cage. This is one of the interesting things about the wave farm locating in Greene County. It's really complicated to do transmission arts programming, I think, in a rural area, and that's kind of informed some of my own current development and working with radio as an artistic medium. It's a lot different than putting something out here in the city. So I got to the Waveform Study Center, and I got to work. The first question at the edge of this new clip of this project research, which was to go through the library and create a piece that would somehow encompass a story or a non-story about transmission arts and other areas of art that use sound. And, you know, it's sort of like saying you're going to do a one-hour documentary about the universe. It's just, you know, practically, ridiculously impossible. But, so I just decided to take a kind of a loose, abstract approach and let there be a certain element of chance and have fun. I honed in on a few compilation books. Radio Rethink, I would highly recommend to anyone who's interested in learning more. And I had a few clips, but sound clips, but I would say if you can just listen to the piece that I ended up making, you'll hear what ended up happening. It was a lot of different components to try to figure out and put together besides the content, but how would it be presented? How would it sound? I needed to have a lot of different voices for one thing, but I was out in the middle of nowhere, alone pretty much. It wasn't like I could gather a group of people to be actors and use their voices, so I decided to use text to voice. You'll hear that in the piece. I've never used that before, but it just seemed like the right answer for this problem. I decided to also choose the areas that I'm really interested in, like pirate radio, the history of pirate radio. I really like noise, so noise is in there. I like the socio-political aspects of radio as a medium to open up conversation and build communities. So I just basically started jotting down quotes from the books, and then that sort of started finding in its way into an organized sense of still not really a documentary. It's just sort of a bigger collage of thoughts about all of these things. And I think if you listen to it, you'll hear it. It'll take you to a whole other place. You'll hear the open-ended, unlimited possibilities of it all. So let's see. The other thing I just want to say is that while you're working at Wavefarm, it's very difficult to work because it's so gorgeous there. And you just want to go out and explore the property. So I did that whenever I needed to take a break. It's just an incredibly beautiful place to be and let your mind open up. And you're connected with nature and the sounds of nature while you're working are all around you. So that really has an impact, I think. I ended up using a lot of the sounds. Besides using collages of other artists' pieces, I used sounds on the property, and I even used sounds of the copy machine in Galen's office. And it's a really incredible thing. The deer come right up to you while you're working. That might be pesky for Tom and Galen, but for me it was really great. Anyway, I'll stop now. Check it out if you have time. The overall finished 1-hour piece is kind of like a giant collage, and it was really fun to me. And thank you for having me here and listening to this.
All right, I think that's about it. We're going to just take a few questions if anybody has any couple of questions.
What year did 3.3.9 start?
1997.
And when did you move?
Upstate to 2004.
What was the reason for moving?
For moving? We kind of thought we had played with the airwaves in the city for a long time and wanted to play with some different airwaves. The palette is a much different upstate. There's much fewer competing signals, so there's much more static and in-between space. Heather.
It's a consequence of these electromagnetic communications transmission systems. So I'm just wondering, what do you think?
It sounds like you're using transmission equipment as an instrument. So it would be the same if, let's see if this works. I smashed this.
Exactly.
Only the batteries broke, but I got a good noise out of it. So it was something like that, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much.
Any other questions? I don't know anything.
How has the community been engaging with the high-powered transmission station?
That's a great question. We're thrilled with how it's been, actually. That 60 hours on the radio station is transmission art, and the other 100 and something are community-based, because we believe firmly in that the airwaves belong to the people and not to particular private interests. So there's community programming that's more typical of community radio stations, but we found that we are influencing them, and they are doing more experimental, say, things in their traditional radio programs where they're interviewing the mayor through... that's not a good example. What's a good example we can think of?
Tom DiPietro's sound effects during the afternoon show.
Right, now they're we're not the only ones bringing in sound effects to the show.
There's a lot of radio theater infiltrating.
We were talking about that. There's a lot of lying on the air. A lot of people say things that are not true in a way that the audience understands that. And I don't think that happened at the beginning of the station.
But Tom, did you explain that we actually got licensed to that commercial station?
Yeah, I did say that. It was a full power 3,300 watt legal station. So it is engaging with a lot of people who would not ever go to gallery openings or see anything or listen to anything that would be termed radio art before. And some of them are now not making it themselves.
Yeah, I mean, a good example is this exhibit on transmittal that we did in Catskill. You know, they were completely freaked out there. I mean, that's in this little gallery that normally does kind of paintings of the lighthouse or whatever local kind of things are going on, and then this very progressive exhibit came in there. It was that was a huge moment, I thought. What did you think, Alan?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, maybe we probably freaked some audience members out, but I mean, it's like Tom said, the area is green in Columbia County, 3 hours upstate, and there's kind of an interesting convergence of a lot of people who are coming from the city more all the time, and then a lot of people that are employed by the local prison system is a big employer up there. So I think this kind of like the duality of the radio station dealing with a really vast amount of different kinds of community programs, community produced programs, and then some very experimental content coming from an international residency program is sort of reflective of what that local community is becoming. And it's exciting. It's a really, like, it's a lively, convergence and conflict at the same time.
Yeah, and I feel like since the station started, I've seen more, I've lived up there for about 13 years now, and this period of time I've seen more what I feel like is tangible change in the communities. From information being exchanged, people learning about more about what each other are doing, that just wasn't happening before. It's powerful, I think, for change. A lot more so than just the same old sort of gallery painting shows. Nothing wrong with painting, but this has been a really exciting project.
Right. Should we get to the next act?
Thank you.